Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A little later on today's program, we'll tell you about a father-daughter partnership that's something to sing about. That's their thing. But first, the relationship between American Muslims and many other Americans can be described as uneasy these days. In the face of Middle East tension and political rhetoric on the right, Islamophobia has become a fact of life for Muslims in our country. We're talking about it with three Muslims, how they're experiencing it, how it's affecting them, and what they're doing about it. Joining me in studio is Saba Fatima, assistant professor of philosophy at Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. She was born in Saudi Arabia. Evren Sinol is a local real estate agent. He was born in Cyprus. Shamin Awan is president of Maryville University's Muslim Student Association. She was born in Albany, New York. Her parents are Pakistani. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Saba, let me begin with you because, as I understand it, you think the word Islamophobia maybe isn't the best word to use.
Right. I was thinking that for Islamophobia to be a thing, you have to know a little bit about Islam itself. And there's a philosopher called Falguni Sheth, and she introduced this idea to me, which is that this is more anti-Muslim racism or anti-Muslim sentiment more so than Islamophobia. It's almost like a visceral reaction that people have when they see Muslim bodies or what they think Muslim bodies might embody. So even if you see a Sikh man, you have the same sort of visceral reaction to them. It's less so Islamophobia and more so an anti-Muslim sentiment, I would say.
Shamin, I guess it doesn't make much difference what you call it if it all boils down to the same thing.
Well, to a certain extent, I do agree with that. I do think that you do need to have a sort of understanding of Islam, but at the same time, I think that the media plays a large role in the perception that people have of Muslims. And so, I mean, especially for me coming from a college campus where a lot of the time people come from all sorts of different places. And so sometimes they've never seen a Muslim before. And so like just to like see them like up front, sometimes they just like they don't know what else to think other than what they've seen on the TV.
Are you saying that the media has done a bad job of representing the Muslim community?
I think that Muslims and things like terrorism and terrorists have been confused. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the real issue is that what a true Muslim is being confused with a terrorist who is not really practicing Islam but is pushing political causes in the name of a religion.
Right. Evren, what do you think about that?
Well, I think I agree. The issue really is the meaning people put behind the word Islam. When people hear the word Islam or they see somebody dressed in a traditional Islamic garment, let's say, their reaction is to go to the news, and all they know about Islam is the terrorism and the events that's happening in the world. If you really get to know the people and you understand that people of Islamic faith are just as friendly, just as religious, but just as humanitarian, and are looking for understanding and peace in the world, their view will change. I think one of the issues is if today we are equating Islam to terrorism, and we're not doing that with other religions, and the media's role, I guess, is to maybe profile a lot of the Muslim people and what they do and how they are not any different than any other people. So we have to distinguish between terrorists, unlawful people, and people of faith.
Before we continue, we've received a number of emails from our listeners on this subject. I'll read a couple of things and really just sort of backs up what we've been saying. Joe writes, whenever ISIS or similar organizations perform a terrorist attack, I am often everyone's go-to guy. Joe is a converted Muslim, by the way. I'm the go-to guy, which means that I get asked questions about Islam on whether or not Islam allows terrorism. That's kind of what you're talking about. That's the approach people are taking.
Exactly. I was out to dinner last Saturday night, and one of the members in the group said, oh, I heard that Islam is not compatible with the Christian culture because they're taught to hate Christians and Jews. And I had to confront her and say, that's total nonsense. Every faith, actually, if you look at it, is...
The roots are the same.
Yeah.
The roots are exactly the same. And that's one of the things that I think many people do not understand. Another question that we get from some of our email readers is concern about Sharia law. You're rolling your eyes.
Sorry.
But you know, even the Missouri legislature got caught up in that in terms of thinking that this is something that has to be absolutely feared and would destroy our country. Why were you rolling your eyes?
Well, Islam, like any religion, prescribes a code of conduct. And that code of conduct is a guide for Muslims on how to live their life. United States cannot implement laws that are contrary to their state laws or their federal laws. For elected officials or anybody at all to rile up fear that somehow Sharia law, which is redundant because Sharia means law, is taking over United States is simply to gain votes, to rile up disenfranchised water base that have economic or economic fears or fears of national security to sort of rile them up so that that they get voted in. The fear is completely unfounded. Sharia itself is merely a guide on how Muslims should conduct themselves in their personal lives and civil society. It need not be implemented through the state. In fact, generally, when it is implemented through the state, it leaves many minorities disenfranchised. I think America has a great opportunity because we have a separation of church and state to give Muslim Americans, to give any religious person of any religious faith an opportunity to live their life according to their religious beliefs without othering that code of conduct.
Ever?
Yeah. You know, we say one nation under God. We don't say one nation under Christian God. We don't say one nation under Jewish God or any other. We say one nation under God. So I think this, in a way, organized religion itself has been creating issues for our civilization over many years. But we have to really think about one nation under God, and there's only one and only one God.
Shamin, Saba spoke of people getting riled up, and a lot of the riling that's being done these days is being done by the political right, Donald Trump and some of the other candidates running for president. What do you make of that? And as this rhetoric has been ongoing, how has it affected you, or has it affected you?
I guess the first thing I would say would be that if Donald Trump really does want to commit to being a U.S. president, he needs to act like one. And by that, I mean that he needs to understand that his country consists of many different people. They always say that the United States is a salad bowl, right? So we're not really trying to be like a mixing bowl where we like try to assimilate everyone. We're trying to make sure that everyone can be an individual and can follow their own beliefs. They don't have to feel like their freedom of expression or freedom of speech are being imposed upon. They can believe whatever they want to. And I think that that's something that Donald Trump is sort of corrupting, I guess, in the sense that take the rally, for example, where the lady was trying to do a silent protest and she was kicked out. I mean, that kind of conduct is, I guess, to Muslims is seen as a violation of the rights that they've worked so hard to attain and that this country has worked so hard to attain.
How have students in your group and in your sphere reacted to this, and has it affected you at all?
As a political science major, I obviously, and as an American citizen, think that he does have the right to say whatever he wants. But when those words are used to promote hatred, that I think that that's very counterproductive towards what he wants. And I think that there was a story where somebody told me that they were at Home Depot and somebody said, "I'm going to vote for Donald Trump just because I don't want to see you here." And she was wearing the hijab and she was covered in everything. And she just said, "I'm going to pray for you because I think that you're ignorant." And he said, I don't believe in your God because your God tells you to kill people. And she said, well, that's exactly why I'm going to pray for you, because you think that that's what I believe. And I think that that really shows that people are following Donald Trump for the wrong reasons. If you want to follow Donald Trump for his economic policies or his other anything else, you know, go ahead, follow him for that. But don't follow him because he's against Muslims, because that's going to traumatize an entire community.
Saba, I'm going to assume you feel pretty much the same way. Tell me if you don't, because I want to ask something else.
Well, as far as Trump is concerned, I'm not as worried about Trump himself. I think mm-hmm. he is a product of the American democracy, where money speaks louder than the constituents. I'm more afraid about people who follow him, people who, you know,
react to him.
Yeah, I go to mm-hmm. Home Depot and say, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump because I don't want to see you, because I have a visceral reaction to seeing your body here. And the reason I'm more worried about that is because Trump has normalized, saying hateful things about minority communities, be it the blacks, be it Muslim community, be it Hispanics. I mean, that guy leaves, hates all minorities, it seems. So I'm more scared about the constituents who follow him for his hateful views. And I think there needs to be a civil discourse with his supporters, in a manner that doesn't make it seem normal to say hateful things, where it makes it sound something that the American public cannot stand for. Or would not stand for.
Evan, the president last night in his State of the Union message, and followed by Nikki Haley, the governor of South Carolina, in the Republican response, both took this on. They were very cautious. They didn't mention names, but they were very strongly suggesting that Mr. Trump and some of the others on the right are on the wrong track. Are you comforted at all by that?
Well, I'm comforted to an extent, but I think they actually had the right idea and made the good move. The difficulty is getting masses to really open their minds to understanding the differences in cultures and accepting those differences. And it's about time for the Republican Party to say something to Mr. Trump. But when I go to different meetings in different areas, I still see the people commenting on, oh, I agree with Trump, you know, we should not let people come in, and all the illegals and a lot of different issues. And just as we were saying, it's not necessarily Islamophobia, it's not necessarily against Islam, but it's against minority cultures that's different than white Anglo-Saxon people.
Well, Muslims aren't the only one that are being singled out these days. I mean, obviously,
correct.
There's a xenophobic wave that seems to be taking over part of this country. Saba, you look like you're ready to say something, but I have to take a break. Hang on to that thought, as we say, and we'll come back and continue the conversation. We're talking about Islamophobia. That's a word we're using today. May not be exactly the right word to use. We're talking about the feeling that many Americans seem to have that is anti-Muslim. My guests in studio are Shamin Awan, president of Maryville University's Muslim Student Association. Evren Sanal is a local real estate agent. And Saba Fatima is assistant professor of philosophy at Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville. We'll be back with our guests in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation on anti-Muslim sentiment in this country today in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Negative local reaction continues to surface today to the NFL owners' vote on Tuesday, allowing the Rams to move from St. Louis to Los Angeles. Mayor Francis Slay told reporters today that he is, quote, done with the NFL, unquote. He says the city will persevere without a football team. An aldermanic committee today approved a measure that would put a renewal of the City of St. Louis's 1% earnings tax on the ballot in April. The tax generates about one-third of the city's annual revenue. The full Board of Aldermen will now consider the ballot issue. And a Missouri Senate committee held a hearing today on a proposal to raise the fuel tax in order to pay for repairs to the state's roads and bridges. The bill's sponsor says the, quote, head-in-the-sand approach, end quote, is not working anymore. You can learn more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with our three guests, all Muslims, talking about the subject matter today, and that is anti-Muslim sentiment that seems very apparent in some quarters today. Sabi, you wanted to say something before we took the break.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that Donald Trump is not the sole Republican candidate. I mean, you mentioned Nikki Haley talking that such sentiments won't be tolerated. But the Republican Party has made it very difficult for any Muslim Americans to call themselves Republican. Ben Carson said that we shouldn't have a Muslim president because we, you know, can't be sure of their loyalty to the country. I think Ted Cruz has said that he wants to carpet bomb the Middle East so much so that he'll find out if the sand glows. I think this amount of hatred and vengeance is not indicative of how the biggest superpower in the world should implement its foreign policy.
Which is precisely what the president said last night, and using the same example, as a matter of fact. Right. Evan, did you want to say something? You were reacting there.
Well, I was just agreeing with her that it seems to me let me back up for a minute and say that I did grow up in Cyprus as a Turkish Cypriot, a Muslim, but when I came to the U.S., I got married to a Presbyterian lady. And in our household, we raised our kids of tolerant of each religion, but mainly we do go to a Presbyterian church. So I think when I first came to the U.S., I was taken in by a Baptist family, as a matter of fact, as a host family, and I felt at home with them, and there was no issue about my religion or their religion. They took me as a person, and I think once you kind of ignore the fact or put aside the people's religious beliefs and treat them as a person, you have a much greater understanding and everything goes smoothly. I think the problem is a lot of the politicians are in the Bible Belt and they're all sort of ingrown and they don't know what the other people are.
You know, I can't remember any of this even being part of the national dialogue until 9/11. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what triggered everything. The wars following that is what has brought all this to the fore. Shamin, let me ask you, you're the only one who is native born here. Have you been discriminated against? Have you had experiences that reflect what we're talking about today?
So when I was born in New York in Albany, and that's 3 hours away from where 9/11 occurred. And so when it first happened, I was only in first grade, so I was probably like 6 or 7 years old. And so even at that such a young age, people had been like as soon as it had happened, people had already been looking at me differently. Like maybe like, and my sister was in fourth grade, and someone had asked her, "Do you have a bomb in your backpack?" Like. And, like, they had known us for years, and, like, they knew that we were, like, peaceful people, that they knew our families, that we used to play together and everything. So it didn't seem to us that it should make a difference. We felt that they knew us enough to know that we weren't any threat to them. And I think that I think that that's where the issue is that people need to understand that the real face of Islam is the face that you see in front of you right now. It's us three people. It's the billions of people who are practicing peacefully. It's not the face of ISIS or ISIL or whatever you want to call it. It's not the face of a terrorist. It's the face of a normal citizen trying to live their everyday life. And all these politics of trying to divide people between religion and nationalities and race, I mean, that's what's getting in the way. At the core of it, we're all human, and we all deserve to just live.
Saba, how about you?
I think that people who are not the subject of Trump's hate have an added responsibility at this moment in history, have an added responsibility of engaging in conversations with their families and friends and making their stance clear or convincing them. I think it is not sufficient to say it in your heart that Trump is terrible, I don't support him, I'm not racist, I'm not anti-Muslim, I'm not anti-black, and so on and so forth, right? I think people who are not the subject of Trump's hate, mainly Caucasian American population, have an added responsibility of engaging in those conversations with their friends and family members. That said, I also think Muslim Americans also have an added responsibility, not necessarily to go, you know, telling the world, hey, we're a peaceful religion. I think that's an undue burden. I think the responsibility that Muslim Americans have is to engage in American politics. They have a responsibility to go vote. They have a responsibility to develop a platform of political demands. There needs to be concerted effort to, have this hatred that's out there right now, have it be tamped down before it becomes prevalent.
Erin, your daughters, two daughters, half Muslim, I think you said, someone called them at one point. Yeah. What sort of experiences have they had?
Well, I have a daughter and a son, but I remember early on when my daughter was in second or third grade, I guess, she was asked what her religion was, and she answered half Muslim, half Christian. And the teacher's reaction was, well, you know, they can't be. You have to choose one or the other. And, my daughter especially, but my children are very sensitive to this issue. And my daughter is in college at University of Tulsa right now, and she actually is concerned about what some of the fellow students are saying or doing. And, it's a concern to her.
Sure. Let's take a couple of phone calls. Listeners want to get into the conversation. We'll start with Mike, who's calling from O'Fallon, Missouri. Mike, go ahead. Mike?
Yes, sir. I'm here. I'm just trying to speak. I'm working here while I was listening.
Yeah, well, go ahead, please. Time's a waste.
I want to try to get this in the form of a question, because it was just a thought sparked by what the one gentleman said, the comment he made about one nation under God, and that he's trying to unify the religions. I think he needs to study that was actually not from our founding fathers. That was added, I believe, in the Cold War era when we were worried about the communists. And the freedom of religion that people enjoy in this country, and we need to keep that First Amendment. We need to stay free, because it also freedom from religion. And I think that it's the righteousness that the monotheistic people have that breeds so much of the contempt, because they know they're right, because they've got God on their side that tells them so.
All right, Mike, thank you for the call. Evan, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I do want to respond to that, and I actually agree with the gentleman. The reason I said one nation under God is to tell those religious people that there are other that their religion wasn't chosen as the right one. But I also 100% agree with you that we are a secular nation, and our separation of church and state, if you will, I do believe in that, and it's something we should keep religion out of politics.
All right. Well, we thank Mike for his call. Let's take another one now. We'll take Dennis calling from University City. Go ahead, Dennis. Make it quick, though, please.
All righty. Islamophobia. I believe we should disregard the, quote, Islam as creation of terrorism and realize that more Islamic people have been murdered in the last 30 years than any other group of people, mostly by Christians, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Chechnya, and then if we go back to the post-World War II, then we're discussing a number of them murdered and sent off to Lebanon from Palestine. And the 9/11 folks were mostly from Saudi Arabia, and I believe, from what I've read, that they resent the disparity between the laws of Islam in Saudi Arabia versus the conduct of the ruling family.
Dennis, thank you for the call. Our time's getting away from us. Saba, do you want to comment as a Saudi, number one, and number two?
So, yeah, I do want to correct that. I was born in Pakistan, but I lived, when I was a baby, I moved to Saudi Arabia. But that said, I think surely history is filled with, to put it mildly, America hasn't had the most normal relations with the Muslim world, with Muslim majority countries. Nobody disputes that, not even Americans. So yes, it is true that we have had a very antagonistic relationship. But I think as Muslim Americans, we have to focus on participating politically within this political process that we exist in here. I think talking about our diasporic ties to our quote-unquote homelands is not very conducive to moving forward in American politics. I think we need to talk in terms of discourse that the general public can understand in terms of perhaps human rights or justice or fairness. But I think referring back to diasporic ties that, hey, you did this to my homeland and so on and so forth, is not gonna help Muslim Americans in this political atmosphere.
Time is really getting away from us here. We have an email that I'd like to just get you to respond to. Do any of your guests know of a place we could go to learn about Islam that would not be evangelical in nature but rather simply informative?
Okay, so that's actually really the heart of what our MSA or Muslim Student Association is trying to do, is that we want people to understand them. We're not trying to convert them. We just want them to help them to understand in a hands-on experience what's going on, what we feel, what we believe, and give a real face to what Islam is. And I know that a lot of times whenever you even study it in school, they only tell you like the basics of it, and you rarely remember that. And so the things that are happening in the media right now, people are pulling quotes from the Quran and without any real context. And that's the real context is what's necessary. People need to understand. And that's what the Muslim community needs to step up and help people understand that.
Well, you're actually behind a project at the university, are you not? The Hijab Awareness Day?
Yeah.
Just tell us quickly about that.
So what we're trying to do is have non-Muslims try on the hijab for one day. And then so we're going to help them tie it on, and then they're going to wear it for the entire day. And then at the end, we're going to have them reflect on what their experience was like. And that's just to help them, I guess, be in the shoes of a Muslim for one day.
You do not wear the hijab.
I don't.
Okay. Saba? You are not wearing one now.
Yes, I do not wear a hijab. But this hijab day thing actually happens all across the United States in a lot of
really?
MSAs.
Right.
So it's happened at SLU, at SIUE. It's something that a lot of MSAs do. So MSA is a great place to go to learn about who the Muslims are without the preachy part of it.
I'm going to have to end this, but very quickly, do you not wear the hijab because it will show that you are Muslim?
No, actually, I've considered wearing the hijab precisely to show the world that I am Muslim.
Yeah,
same thing. All right. A final thought, everyone?
Well, I was going to say there is an association that actually has taken Missourians to Turkey, to visit Turkey and show them to Islam. So maybe we can have some links on the website to some resources
we will definitely do that. I've got to end it right there. Unfortunately, there's much more that we could talk about, but time's gotten away. I want to thank Shamina Wan for being with us. Thank good luck with your part in the Hijab Awareness Day and your studies at school. Evren Sanol, thank you so much for being with us. And Saba Fatima, thank you so much.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you, Don. We appreciate it.
Coming up, a father and a daughter very much in tune. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.